But if you're looking to have a six pack and hang out by a fire, then, you know, grab that six pack by Braxton or Stone Brewing or whatever it may be.
Hello, everyone. Again, welcome back to the Craft Brewers Creative Podcast, the craft beer podcast for everything creative and visual, but not necessarily drinkable in the craft beer industry, where every week we get to either try some new beers or talk to someone from the industry, whether that's a brewer, artist, you know, marketing director, sales, you know, person or whatever. There are just so many people in the industry that it's just so interesting to talk to and get to pick their brains about how we really get our beer, how we get the can art that we love, and learn more about the process behind it. So welcome back. I'm excited that this week I do have another interview to share with you. I know the past few weeks have been solo episodes, me trying different beers and stuff that were really pertinent to the time. And as some of you know, I've had a lot of changes going on. I've just moved from Atlanta all the way up to Brooklyn, New York. And wow, can I say it feels good to be back in New York City. I truly belong here. I truly don't belong in Atlanta. It's just, I don't know what you want to call it, whether it's culture, whether it's whatever. I belong here. I don't belong there. I'm happy to be back home. And people are asking me, like, well, why did you move? Why did you do this? Well, I mean, my whole life is here. My life is in, you know, New York City. I grew up in New Jersey. I went to college in upstate New York at Cornell. And so basically everyone from school there moves to New York City. Everyone that I went to high school with and that I know from then, they all moved to New York City. My sister is here. My brother and my parents are in New Jersey, you know, an hour away from me now, not a plane ride away. And this is just where my life is. It's where I belong. And so I'm really happy to be back. And I was super scared that my apartment was going to be like a closet, because in Atlanta, I mean, you just can't compare, you know, Atlanta real estate to New York City. The prices are just wildly different in terms of square footage and space. And oh my gosh, when I tell you that they don't list square footage on apartments in New York City, because like, I think it's just so small, they don't want to tell you. So my parents found this place. I had not seen it before I moved in here. I was so scared it was going to be so small. And I mean, I have so much stuff, like stuff I totally don't need, but I just have a lot of stuff that, you know, I'd either have to sell or throw out or something. And I was just like, I don't want to have to deal with getting rid of 90% of my belongings so that I can fit in this shoebox of an apartment. But you guys, I'm here. And I love this place. Like, it is smaller, but like, it's a good size. And I have these windows and they bring in so much light. And I have this nice view. And, you know, while it maybe doesn't fit my like massive sofa that I loved, you know, really, did I need that much seating room? I don't know. And I no longer have a bedroom. It's funny. I was like, when I was unpacking, I was like, oh yeah, this should go in the other room. Oh wait, there is no other room because it's a studio, but honestly, this is like more appropriate and like a better sized apartment for me than my old place was. Like, my place in Atlanta was stupidly large. Like, I'm sorry, I don't need two sinks in my bathroom, you know, but here my kitchen sink is like literally like, I don't think you're supposed to use it. It's so small. Like, if I have to wash like a pot or something, like I'll have to do it in my shower. But what I've been learning is that a lot of home brewers, you know, kind of do that anyways, because you have a lot of stuff to wash and you need more space. And so maybe while I'm at it, I should just get into the home brew deal, because if I'm going to be washing stuff in my shower anyways, may as well go all in. And I do have room, I think, that I could do that. I don't think it would take up that much space. I don't know. But so I'm here now, and it is just wildly different from where I was, but I'm so happy to be back here. But I do have to say, as I've mentioned before, like, not having my Atlanta beer is like really hitting hard, because I really got into the industry in Atlanta And there are so many breweries there that I don't have access to. Like, last night, all I wanted was a Firemaker IPA. And, well, I don't think I can get that here. And so, while that's sad, there are so many other breweries from New York and also local that I'm excited to, you know, become more acquainted with and try. But so, I want to get into today's episode because this one was really fun to record. Mike from the Craft Beer Bucket List was so nice to join me for a conversation about his podcast, the Craft Beer Bucket List, about, you know, the craft beer industry, about the craft beer industry or community on Instagram, and really covering so many different topics about the industry and personal and everything. And I really had a lot of fun talking to him and had a lot of fun with this interview, and I'm excited to finally be able to share it with you. So let's get into it. I'm excited for you to hear this one. So here is my conversation from a while back with Mike of the Craft Beer Bucket List. I'm really excited to have you on because not only have you owned and run a brewery in the past, you have your own podcast talking about beer. You do all the things.
Thank you.
And yeah, let's get into your history or your...
Well, I'll give like the Reader's Digest. So I got my undergraduate degree at Oklahoma State, started off with civil engineering, did a few years of that, did an internship, didn't like it. At the time, I was working for the Boys and Girls Clubs of America as a kind of like a side hustle, something part-time. Switched to, at the time, it was Leisure Service Management, and that's no longer the name. They call it Rec Management or Park Management now, depending on where you're at, but... after that, I worked for Muskogee Parks and Rec, ran a rec center. Then I moved to Illinois, got my master's degree at Western Illinois University in recreation, parks, and tourism. That was during a Great Recession. I got a job during the Great Recession, I guess, doing vegetation management. So basically, I was over crews that did tree trimming. A lot of our contracts were with power companies, so trimming along power corridors and right-of-ways, easements. After that, worked with the state parks in Oklahoma to do master planning. So I did a lot of GIS work, did a lot of visitor use management research, and at the same time completed my PhD. It was during that time that I got interested in, like really interested in craft beer. A buddy and me, we developed a business plan to start a craft brewery there in Stillwater, Oklahoma. We both kind of not went our separate ways because we're still real good friends, actually, but we both went our professional separate ways. I completed my PhD, moved to Kentucky. He completed his master's degree and now works in the Tulsa area in Broken Arrow. But we had the business plan. I had taken a few homebrewing classes at that point out of Tulsa, was not good at it. Admit that I made very mediocre to terrible beer, but my buddy Jody was good and he had a knack for it. So I moved to Kentucky, started a new job as a professor at Eastern Kentucky University. After a few years, got connected with a few local folks that were also in the craft beer, and we opened a craft beer bar. And it was our pilot venture to see if a brewery would work in the area. We all liked craft brewing. Several of us in that group, so there's a guy named Darren Wilson, who's now at Northern Kentucky University, a guy named Charlie Hamilton, a lady named Tara Eddington. And there's a few other people that came in early on and left early on, but really it was me, Darren, Taryn, and Charlie. So Charlie was a brewer. Taryn was a bar manager, has a long history of working in taproom management. Darren was a home brewer. And I had done terrible home brewing a long time ago, but I had a little bit of the background with parks, rec, and tourism. So the pilot project with the craft beer bar went really well. We did well enough that we saved up enough money to get to apply to have a down payment for a loan to start the entire brewery process. So we started Dreaming Creek Brewery, 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, I guess. So it opened 3 years ago. The process was probably about four years ago. opened in downtown Richmond, and it's still going today. I'm still keeping contact with the owners there. Darren and I both moved on to other things. Charlie and Taryn are still there doing great things there. So it's a six barrel brew system there. They have, I haven't been there in a little bit, but last time I was there, they have, six barrel fermenters, a couple 3-barrel fermenters, a bright tank. It was a Colorado Brewing System. And I know Colorado Brewing as a manufacturer is now out of business. So maybe when they upgrade, they'll have to upgrade probably to a different system, but it was a Colorado Brewing System. We had 24 taps. At any time we had 20 to 23 beers on tap, and then we usually had our own soda on tap as well. It was a 4,000 square foot building. About 2,000 of that was the tap room. Had a large parking lot, had an outdoor area, had a local guy do the bar. I mean, it was super cool, and I'm super proud of my time there. I had the opportunity to take a job, get closer to Oklahoma and Texas, closer to family. So I took this job where I'm at now, Russellville, Arkansas, Arkansas Tech, and had to leave behind that. And, we talked, the Charlie and Taryn and I, and just decided that at the time it was probably best for me to get bought out versus go into like a silent partnership kind of role, which I understand that really well. My main responsibilities at the brewery was the finance aspect of it, and a little bit of the marketing and a little bit of the management of events and tap room and stuff like that. And depending on what was going on in our personal lives, we kind of all participated in that. And that's something I really valued with the two other owners is, kind of working together to attack whatever issues arose from different angles. But mostly I was in charge of finances, making sure everything, all the bills were paid, making sure all the taxes were kept up. I mean, all that kind of stuff. And then I did a lot with social media, developing, brands. We worked as a collective mostly, but that was kind of my deal in special events. So last year I had the opportunity to move here, so I did. And I'll backtrack a little bit on the podcast. We're going into our third, this will go into our third year coming up in the fall of doing a podcast. And that was a completely separate thing. Another buddy of mine, he has a YouTube channel. He likes to have a diversity of little projects going on, as do I. And he said, let's start a podcast and just talk about beer. And I said, all right, let's do it. Started off as like a complete fun project, and it's really turned into a little bit more work than I anticipated, but it's been a lot of fun. So Craft Beer Bucket List is our podcast. We originally was just, we're going to review a couple beers and talk trash to each other on the podcast. And it's really turned into talking a lot more about beer, what's in the beer, bringing on guests. And now we just started a project with the Arkansas Brewers Guild, and we're creating a podcast series that's going to accompany their Craft Beer Passport for the state. And in fact, we just recorded our first three raw audio sessions, looking at Point Remove Brewing in Morrilton, Stone's Throw Brewing in Little Rock, and then Diamond Bear Brewing in Little Rock. And so we hope to have those completely edited and all that by the end of the month, and they'll be posting some new episodes. So I think that's the Reader's Digest package. I can answer any questions you have from there, of course.
Yeah, thanks for that. I have to say, it was so funny when you can hear the your like analytical tourism GIS brain when you're even talking just about your brewery. You're like, yep, there's parking lot and the everything is funny. It's like very clearly like coming through there, with the detail and the aspects that you're looking at everything. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about like when you were doing the marketing for your brewery and everything, how, and we were talking about how, it's a unique industry.
Sure. Yeah.
When it comes to marketing or, coming up with a, social media or something strategy because of the distribution and because of how local some craft beer really is. And they might not distribute out of that town. And so I thought that was really interesting. So I'd love to chat a little bit more about that and how important it is to convey, you know, that the story or the, you know, whatever behind each brewery for their marketing, but then also what you're doing with bringing in with the consulting and kind of like strategies that you have and stuff like that. Yeah.
So as a consultant, and I didn't mention that, I've done some consultant work with some various breweries at this point. I think that the key thing is for breweries, you know, we always say, know who you are and know what lane you're in, right? So not necessarily, you know, I know there's the whole thing, stay in your lane is kind of a common quote, but it's not so much that as, you know, knowing who you are, knowing which lane you're in, and knowing if you're going to stay in that lane or, you know, go elsewhere. So I think that's the first thing is deciding who you are and what you want to be. You know, some breweries want to be a very local hometown hangout. Some breweries want to be a regional powerhouse, you know, or, you know, when I say regional, I'm thinking like a region of a state or a state. Some states want to be, or some breweries want to be, you know, expand to a couple of, you know, adjacent states. And some people at some point want to go nationwide or more, right? So it's really understanding where you want to be and what your goals are and why. And I think a lot of breweries, you know, I think the thing I like about breweries are the people, right? The brewers, the owners, the taproom managers, the employees, they're all genuinely good folks. But a lot of times what I've noticed, I want to say a lot of times, some of the folks I've worked with is, you know, need to identify and really think about some of those questions of who they are and where they want to go. You know, a lot of times they're a really good brewer, a home brewer or whatnot, or they've learned at a different site. And so they're really good at that. And because of that, they take that skill and strike out on their own or work with a couple other people and open a new brewery. And that's fine. But it's, you know, it's like the whole thing. If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And so I think that's the first thing that we work with a lot of people on is, you know, thinking about what you want to be, who you are and that kind of stuff. And from there, identify who your target is, you know, who are you trying to bring in? When we were Dreaming Creek Brewery there in Richmond, you know, it was the first brewery in the area. Our main goal was to get the local people to join us. And, you know, the fact of the matter is a lot of local people, like the big brands, the Miller Lite, Bud Light, you know, whatever it may be. And that's fine. I don't have anything against big brand beer either. So you got to know that's your audience and that's who you're competing with, right? So if you want to get those people in to experience your brewery, you got to have a beer to introduce them into craft beer that's going to be similar. And, you know, we did a real good job with that. We have several different beers there at Dreaming Creek that were, you know, craft beer introductions along those lines. And you also got to meet them where you're at. So, you know, getting involved locally, getting involved, you know, in the different organizations, all that kind of stuff. And being a part of that community. And that's going to be the key part for like those real local folks, right? And then just being an advocate. I think that's another thing is that a lot of these, you know, you work really hard and you put a lot of hours into making the best beer, a lot of hours into making a great experience when you're on site. And, you know, if you're not out there being an advocate and doing marketing for yourself, you're going to sell yourself short. Because if people don't know you're there, it doesn't matter how great your tap room is or how great your beer is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's the key entry point, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, today it's hard because I feel like if you look up small business, you know, marketing or anything, the first thing that happens is everyone screaming social media down your face. And, you know, that's not sometimes appropriate or sometimes you're what works for, you know, 99% of brands or companies out there is not going to work because, well, when the benefit of social media is you have access to everyone, what happens when you're really that local? So what advice do you give or what was your strategy when you were at Dreaming Creek?
Yeah, and as far as marketing, getting that story out, I think people look to social media as the magical bullet or the magical solution, and it's really not. if you're going to use it, you got to use it appropriately. At Dreaming Creek, we found, you know, everybody thinks about Instagram and TikTok and all these new things. And what we really found is Facebook was really probably the best marketing tool we had as far as online stuff. But beyond that, us having the pilot project of having the beer house there really brought in a lot of people into our story, into our family, if you will, before we ever opened the doors. Each of the three owners that ended up there, we all were involved in the community in different ways. So I was involved with the university setting. Charlie and Taryn were both from there originally and knew a lot of people. So I think that did a lot more for the initial marketing push than anything we could have put online. You know, and we did. And I think the other part is leverage that. You know, we talked to the local news people and we had relationships with them. And anytime they wanted to come and interview us, we were happy to talk to them. We opened early, stayed late, all that kind of stuff. And then working with communities, working with groups within the community. You know, if they wanted to say, we want to come in at 3 and you open at 4. Well, I'm going to come in an hour early and make sure that you can come in and meet. And whether it's there's all kinds of different reasons that, you know, all different groups of people meeting that, you know, they have, and I don't want to call out anybody specifically, but, you know, being accessible to the community. Right. And I think that did a lot. And I think that's where, it's hard because you're sitting there putting in 40, 50 hours in the brew house, and then you're working the tap room at night. Especially for, you know, smaller operations. And it's just tough to say, man, I also need to open early, or I need to stay open late, or I need to give these people my time for an interview or whatever it may be. And that gets tough, and I get it. But I think it's the people that make that happen that have a better foothold. But it is, it's all about telling your story. And I think that, you know, people, and I don't mean this in a bad way, some craft breweries, you don't have to be GABF winning brewery. You don't have to have the best beer in the world to be one of the most successful breweries. You got to have good beer and you got to have a great space and great people. And the way to, you know, get to that great people and that great space and making people comfortable is they got to come along with your story. And most breweries have a pretty interesting story. So I think it's just finding ways to tell that and connecting with the community.
Yeah, so, I love that. Does that make sense? 100%. Yeah, I love that. And I know that you're, you know, also showcasing that ability kind of with your podcast. And so I'd love to kind of talk about like your goals with the podcast, why you made it in the first place, what that's been like for you, a little bit about like the guests you've had on and your experience with that.
Yeah. Originally we started off as a fun thing. And it's still fun. I don't mean to sound like it isn't, but originally it really was just, let's start a podcast and have fun with it and see where it goes. And, you know, I know a lot of people, there's been a lot of podcasts pop up, recently. And I think we started on the beginning of that boom. And you know, I got lucky. Ray has a background doing editing. I have connections in the industry. I try to get us a good selection, variety of beer, try to get us product that people want to listen about and hear mm-hmm. about.
Yeah. So you're drinking beer, with Ray and like reviewing it, talking about it.
Yeah.
Just a conversation over some beer too.
Yeah. So most of the time we have the same beer together. So we drink, let's just say we both have a Toppling Goliath Sudosu in front of us. So we drink that one at the same time, talk about what each of us get out of it as far as taste and all kinds of good stuff. Right. And then the second half, we each have a beer that's different. So we'll follow up with him having a local Oklahoma beer. Maybe I'll have a Kentucky or Tennessee or Arkansas, whatever it may be. Right. And we kind of go through the process, but we have separate beers at that point. And the first goal is for us to have fun. If we weren't having fun, I wouldn't be interested in doing it. The second goal is to really celebrate the diversity of breweries, the diversity of beer styles and all that kind of stuff. And that's one of the coolest things is going and trying to find unique beers. So we also try to get a beer that's local to us. So like I can get it in Arkansas, but maybe you cannot get it in Georgia or whatnot. And then we try to get a beer that everybody can get. So I can get it, you can get it, anybody in the United States can get it. So, you know, while we want to have the new coolest local stuff, if we put that on a podcast exclusively, then there's no reason for Jenna to listen, right? And there's, you know, she's never going to, or not never, but it's unlikely she's going to have access to a small batch from a small brewery in Western Arkansas. So we try to mix it up. But really, you know, start to tell, you know, give people an idea of all the diversity of products and breweries out there and celebrate them and really give them props, right? And most of the time it works out great. We try to get good beer. We try to, you know, if a beer has really bad reviews, we try to avoid it. In all honesty, I don't want to get on there and say, this is a terrible beer. I just don't want to do that. Now, I'm going to be honest, and Ray's honest as well, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to get the best representation of the beer, best representation of the product.
Yeah, I love that. That's something that, you know, always, you know, not kind of trying to give a good review or not looking to say anything too specifically against a beer or something. That's something I'm kind of nervous about because I'm like, you know, I'm getting started with all of this and there are some great local breweries with massive reputations, at least locally, and I don't like their stuff and I don't know what to do about it. I'm like, do I just not include it? I'm not trying to be negative, but I also, you know, but I'm also trying to be truthful. I'm not going to push something that I don't actually like because that's not what I'm trying to do. But what do you do? so yeah, that's,
I think, you know, funny. Something that we try to do is, you know, and we got lucky. I prefer lagers and stouts as far as, you know, styles. Ray likes the IPAs, the APAs and all that kind of stuff. And so I think what we try to do really is, you know, we try to understand the beer from the style perspective. You know, if it's, you know, if it's a certain type of style that, and I'm telling you, sours are hard for me, right? So sour beers are very popular. And most of the time, sour beers, it's not a good time for me. I know that going in. So I try to talk about the beer from a style perspective. Mm. Like it may not be something I like specifically, but from the style, what can I say about it? But beyond that, again, we try to avoid the beers where we know we're not going to have a good time because that's the game, right? And the other part is to remember, you know, this, and talking about big beer, right? A lot of people like to talk trash about Bud Light, Coors Light, whatever it is. Those are the number one selling brands in the world for a reason. people like them. Or, you know, then that's the doggone truth. People enjoy those. So the reality is everybody's got different taste buds and enjoys different things. If you can approach it from that and say, hey, listen, this isn't for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a trash beer. Mm-hmm. Now, there are trash beers out there, and I've had plenty of them, believe me. But sometimes that helps out, right? But I think you're exactly right. I think if I don't enjoy a beer, and I know that ahead of time, I don't promote it. I don't talk about it. I don't try to share it or anything like that. But I definitely don't try to trash it either. You know, sometimes these are breweries that had one misfire. Maybe it was a bad can or whatever. And I, you know, just like anybody else, I don't want anybody to judge me on one specific thing that they saw about me. I want to, you know, the whole work, right? The entire project of me to be evaluated. So I try to do that with breweries as well.
Yeah, totally. I think for me, it's like not even about the beer itself, but I'm like, I literally just don't like the can. And I'm here because my focus is the, you know, the visual side of the industry on the cans and the, you know, and I'm sorry, it's a piece of marketing, it's a piece of art, but if you don't see it as a piece of art and you just slap a logo on it, I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm bored. I don't care if you have the best beer. So it's funny, but I think that's also, you know, one of the reasons I just love the industry so much is that there are so many small local places you've never heard of, and because of just vicinity. And while I might not get to try their beer, I can really appreciate their, you know, the artwork on the can or kind of that side of it. And so I think that that's something that I think can unite, you know, small local, you know, things across the country and across the world. I think, you know, the UK kills it with the can art game, and so does Canada, I feel like. But yeah, so.
Well, I think that's a really good kind of piece to like think about too. It's like, you know, when you're going into a package store or whatnot, you know, what are some of the things that people look for? So that, you know, they look for price point, they look for style, and then they it's the can, like, you know, and there's different versions of what's appealing to people, right? And we had somebody that I think that I mentioned to you previously is we had Beer Babe Jess on as a guest, and she does a lot of design work for a lot of breweries. And, you know, looking at what that looks like and what that, you know, what draws people to the design. And you got to, if you're in the distribution game, you've got to seriously consider that as a piece of that puzzle, right? So I think overall, I think people, you know, again, they're making good beer. They're going through the process of keeping the tap room open. And sometimes that's a little bit lost. You know, they're thinking like, this is what I like. And I think that's another piece that's important is, you know, just because you like it and think it looks cool doesn't mean everybody else does. Sometimes you're on point, sometimes you're not. But it matters what, you know, whether it's a bottle label or a can label, whatever it may be. There's plenty of times I saw I'll tell you what I see is I see the terrible ones. I'm like, this is very bad. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the good ones, I see them and there's plenty of good ones, but then you see one that's, you're just like, and what the heck is going on with this? Either it's too busy, the colors are off, or contrast is off, you know, alignment's terrible, whatever it may be. But that's an important component to that marketing. You know, when you're on a shelf and you're competing for shelf space, you're competing for that, you know, that first glance of folks as they walk down the aisle. You got to have it.
Yeah.
You got to bring it.
I think what's interesting too about it is thinking back as a consumer, you know, before I was more into beer, it's like, well, why are, you know, the big brands so big? Well, one, they have the distribution, obviously, but it's also like, you know, if I don't know what I want to buy, you know, it's a safe bet that it's not,
sure,
you know, that it's something that's fine. Or like, you know, personally is like, you know, if I'm supposed to bring beer to something and I'm like showing up, I'm like, well, all these guys are going to judge me what I show up with. So you know what? Let's go with Natty Light. No one's going to say a word about it. Like, I mean, you know, this is me in college.
Okay, now you're getting a little
This is me in college, but it's like, you know, they have, you know, it's like you go through cases and cases. It's like, well, one, price point, you're not going to, you know, get the best craft beer for that. But you don't know any better. It's just what's there. And it's the marketing also is like, you know, they're not, you know, AB InBev, they're not trying to help you discover other beers that they have, in my opinion. It's like just shoving the one thing in your face all the time. And I feel like there's just such an opportunity to also, like, if you just clarify a little bit or help the consumer out who might not know what they're looking for, help them out by having, you know, a can that looks and feels like, you know, that message or that feeling you're trying to put across.
So I think the big beers, what they do right is there's consistency in product and there's consistency in messaging and consistency in placement. So when you walk into a package store or a convenience store or a grocery store, you know, they have the resources in place to position themselves to be at the right there, wherever you need them to be. The product's always consistent, no matter what. A Bud Light in Georgia, a Bud Light in Oregon, whatever, it's gonna be very consistent. You know what you're gonna get. Coors Light, you know, Miller Light, whatever it may be, Miller High Life, Pabst Blue Ribbon, you know, all those beers have done a lot of good things as far as that goes. And then, you know, you've got the consistent messaging as well, right? And I think that's, and I think craft beer is starting to get to that. I think, you know, you're seeing a lot more craft lagers that are going to try to take some of that market share, and good lagers, right? One of my favorite lagers by a craft beer is out of Northern Kentucky. It's Braxton Brewing. And, they have several good ones at this point, I guess, but you know, how do you get that market share? You know, you got to get there in front of the eyes and whatnot. So I think you're right. And I think that, you know, pushing that in front of people and saying, you know, this is a little bit more expensive. So, you know, if you're looking to take a 30 pack to a college party to do beer pong with, then, you know, that's a different experience and you're looking for something different. But if you're looking to have a six pack and hang out by a fire and really have a longer and different experience, then, you know, grab that six pack by Braxton or, you know, that Stone Brewing or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But I think that's important too. You can go back to that can art and, you know, the thematics of that, the color schemes and all that with the messaging is making sure that when the opportunity comes, you're going to be in the right place. You're going to have the right attraction to the right people.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as we mentioned, you know, social media isn't necessarily the number one thing for some craft breweries, but right. But I think we were chatting, and I kind of want to hear a little bit more about your overall view on social media, especially with Instagram and the community, the craft beer community that is on Instagram, and that really does like to, you know, celebrate each other's, you know, beers. And
I'm going to take a guess that I'm a little bit older than you. So I think it has changed a lot too, right? So when I was young, when I was really young, we didn't have a computer. But I remember, you know, when computers kind of were up and coming, and, you know, everybody was afraid of it. And I think that, and for whatever that those may be founded in some factual stuff, but I think that it's just evolved. It's changed. It went, you know, and I remember the days of MySpace where you created your online profile with MySpace and you created that and had that out there. And, it was very, you know, you could do a little bit of, you know, editing yourself and creating your profile. But that was really my first foray into that, is thinking about like what I look like online and cultivating that image out there. And I think that as time has moved on, and you know, the rise of social media has taken a new turn. And you know, like when I was younger, you could chat online using AOL Instant Messenger, or before that, you know, some other programs and whatnot, but you weren't really integrated online. And now, you know, like you said, you got LinkedIn, where I can go find somebody on LinkedIn and look at their professional stuff. I can find them on Facebook and see something else, and then find them on Instagram and see something else. And it's all part of who you are. So I think you got
to
be.
Yeah. But then you have to be something, and it's like, well, what do I want? What do I want to portray then? It's
right.
It's hard. And it's like, do I want to even portray anything?
Right. So I think you got to be careful. You know, you got to be careful with that is the way I look at it. You know, obviously, for my full-time job, you can find me and find out where I work pretty easily. You know, there's no hiding that. I'm a public employee. You know, we've got the podcast, former brewery owner. You know, it's out there. So it's, you know, it's either fight it or embrace it for me. And that's how I kind of look at it. And I try to embrace it and try to, not that I want to misdirect anybody, because I want to be careful with that. And I think that's something that I'm leery about online, seeing other people's stuff. I'm like, man, you know, like I want to be authentic, you know, genuine. But I also want to have things that are, you know, there's things in my life that are private or, you know, nobody's business kind of thing. Right. So thinking about that, you know, thinking about how you portray yourself. But I think it has changed. I think there are more people using that to their advantage and doing a good job out of it, you know, and, you know, integrating with the online experience, whether, you know, you got breweries on Instagram, people on Instagram, you know, whatever. And I'm not on TikTok, but you got TikTok and, you know, some of these other ones that are up and coming. You know, my buddy has his own YouTube channel, and you know, utilizing all that. And if used right, I think it can be a wonderful experience. I think it can be a great thing. So I think it's a matter of understanding your identity. Again, like we were talking about the breweries, right? Understanding who you are and what you want to be and cultivating and working toward that. And I see a lot of people doing great things on their social media profiles. And then you see some people that I think are, in all honesty, just disingenuous, you know? And that's not good. You know, they, you know, you and I talked a little bit about that. They, you know, they may get a lot of interactions, but, you know, both Ray and I, with our podcast and with our personal profiles, we view it as, you know, it's our time to celebrate the beer and the breweries. And while we're the host of the podcast, the focus is the brewery or the beer. The focus isn't us. And we try to, you know, and we want to create a fun environment while we're on the podcast, and we like having guests on and having a great interaction. But again, it's about the beer. You know, it's about, you know, what are we having? You know, and beer has a great, many beers and many breweries have great stories, and, you know, focusing on that. And I think if, you know, just like you, you know, with the can art and all that is, you know, if you focus on the core aspect of what you want to do, then you don't have to worry about being disingenuous, you know, like being genuine and being who you are comes along with it. Is that all making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You had briefly just mentioned how, you know, some people are not maybe ingenuine, but also, you know, there's a difference between being active and, you know, just ever present and everywhere, and then being engaging and actually, you know, being interactive and talking to people and not just like existing in it, but immersing in it and like talking to people and,
sure,
you know, being an active member of something. And, you know, with that though, it's a very different, like, but Instagram or Facebook or whatever, it's not limited to that community that you want to share this in. It's open to everyone in the whole, you know, whole world. And so, you know, attaching your, you know, your face and your person to what you're working on. I mean, for me, they were always such separate things. I mean, my Instagram was private, but I had like me, my pictures and my family or whatever. And then when I went into the office in a suit and worked in finance, I'm not TikToking about the Excel spreadsheet. I'm working and then shutting it. And that's a separate ordeal. And this is like, you know, in the mixing of, you know, it's like you kind of are forced a little bit, at least I feel pressure to mix my personal and then professional in this. Has that been, you know, what's that been like for you?
Yeah. So I think that's a part of the industry, right? And I think, you know, whether you're in beer, you know, and done some work with other wine and spirits as well, is I think that's just part of that industry, is that merging of that. You know, I definitely think there's industries where it's not, like you said, you know, you're not going to have I'm sure there's probably a finance TikTok or whatever, but that's not, you know, the nature of it is different. But I think anytime you get into the hospitality realm, whether you're creating programs, events, or experiences for other people, that's going to be the consumers on the other end are going to look and find those experiences in a variety of ways. And, you know, when you're looking for an accountant, you're looking at how well they can save you money or use your money to your advantage, right? You don't care about how you feel at the end of the day. You're not, you know, you don't watch a TikTok accountant and think, oh, that was awesome. You know, that's just not what you're searching for. But when you're looking for an experience at a craft brewery or something similar, you are looking for a feeling. You are searching for that a little bit different experience. And so I think, you know, having those people that blur those lines, the people that are blurring into the industry like that, helps a little bit more and it matters a little bit more. And again, there's people that do it brilliantly that, you know, again, a core thing to think about is how am I promoting beer or the sale of beer or the trying a beer and all that kind of stuff, right? This craft beer, you know, if the focus is, you know, Mike getting more followers on Instagram, then that's disingenuous. If the focus is, how can I get more people to see this beer that I had that I loved, right? I recently tried for the first time Odell Brewing out of Fort Collins, Colorado, their milk stout called Lugine. And I liked it. And I really liked it. I'm thinking, and this is something people can get in a lot of different places, right? I'm thinking, how, you know, and that's the first thing I thought of. Like, people that like milk stouts, people that like stouts, people that like darker beers like that, they need to know about this, or, you know, in my own way. And that was the thing. It wasn't, you know, how can I use Lugine milk stout to get more followers on my personal mm-hmm. Instagram? You know, and I think that's a different mindset, right?
Absolutely.
And you know, there are these social media influencers are who they are. They have a place. You know, I don't look at, when I see photos online, if the person is the focus and not the beer, I typically unfollow the people. And, you know, whether it's a comedian, whether it's a very good looking person, whether, you know, it's, you know, whatever it may be, a superstar athlete or whatever, if the focus is a person and not the product, then that's not for me. I'm looking at what new products are out there. I'm not going to buy a photo of this person. I'm not going to buy their sneakers or whatever it may be, right? So I think that's a difference in how I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that, you know, I'm still figuring out too, is because, you know, I wanted to start something where I didn't have to put my face on the internet. And, you know, I started working on the beer page and I'm like, all right, well, we got to have a face. You can't just be, right, a non whatever. And then, you know, that gets, you know, it does better. It performs better when you do include right. that. And when you are more of a personality. But so I'm trying to figure out a way to balance, you know, being, you know, my focus is the artistic and visual components inside of the craft beer industry. But,
sure.
But to be a part of that community, you don't want to engage with no one. And so it's like this weird balance, and I've not figured it out. I'm working on it for sure. But yeah, it's definitely challenging. And also just with, you know, just from a putting yourself out there point of view, it's definitely not the most nurturing, or doesn't, you know, doing that for the first time doesn't feel like a warm hug necessarily. It's more like an ice bath, and I'm like, get me out of here.
You know, I think it's, you know, your concerns are, you know, I don't know, like, so our craft beer bucket list account is ran by me and Big Ray. Neither one of us are supermodels. Nobody's going to confuse me with George Clooney or anything like that, right? But what we found is, you know, when we started when we are more involved in the pictures. So again, not the focus, but just the fact that, you know, our smiling faces are there. People are, you know, so it's not just a picture of the beer. And we do that a lot. We have a picture of the can or the beer or whatnot. And it says, you know, this is what it is. We liked it, whatever. But we noticed that when we're a little bit more involved in either the picture or the description, or there's a little bit of a story behind it and all that, the spread is much better, right? It gets, so it finds new audiences, and it has a little bit more of a that's my academic stuff leaking out. You know, like it's the proliferation is a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, you know, people want to connect it, and I, you know, I don't want to be the focus, but you know, for some reason people like to, you know, if you're having a good time and you're smiling, and they see that, like, oh, he said it was good, and look, he's smiling while he's holding it. You know,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot going on there, but it does better. I give Ray a hard time. He took a shower beer picture a while back, and for a long time, that was by far our best performing post, right? And Ray's a great guy. But again, you know, it's not like we're supermodels over here. But it was, for a while, it was the best performing post for a reason. It was real, it was genuine, and Ray was having a great time and having a good beer.
Yeah.
And people connect with that, right? And same with you. People are going to connect with you. You know, like this person seems real and genuine. Somebody who is like me for whatever, you know, for different ways, right? And I think that's what they're looking for. They're looking to connect, maybe not personally, but connect in some way.
Yeah. I don't know. I love that shower beer picture. I think it's great. So I'm definitely on board with that. But then as a, you know, and that's kind of as someone, you know, in the industry or just kind of coming in as a consumer almost. But for breweries, it's different too with, you know, trying to use it to make money and trying to use it as, you know, an advertisement and, you know, working with like, you know, these quote, you know, influencers and stuff. But again, like that doesn't necessarily work for, you know, for someone with local distribution. Right. And so.
Well, you know, for a good example of that is when we were at the brewery, Dreaming Creek, there's a couple different times people, local celebrities, I guess you would say, and I use that term very fun, you know, but, you know, people that were social media influencers that were local approached us about, you know, working with them. And good people, and I don't dislike them, but I think they do miss the mark sometimes, or whether they get that, like, you know, $1,000 and I'll post a picture of me holding the beer, for example, right? And you got to realize that for a small brewery, that's a yearly budget. But the other part of it, just like you said, if I'm only distributing in a small region or even statewide, there's very little reason for me to go externally and try to promote outside of those boundaries, for example. So I think it's, you know, it's a matter of understanding the market. I think there are places where it's very good and works. You know, we are good friends with a young lady out of Charlotte, Hoppy Hayes. Terrific young lady. I say young, I'm not trying to be facetious. You know, great. We love her. And she, you know, and locally, she does a really good job at promoting local products and getting people out locally. But again, that's the she's more locally centric, and they have a different beer scene there with a lot of small, mid, and larger operations. So I think, you know, knowing where you're at and knowing how to utilize that. I'm in Russellville, Arkansas, or I'm outside of Russellville, Arkansas. There's not. I'm never gonna get somebody to get me to promote local for them, right? The Little Rock has a good brewery scene, and I love that. But you know, if my influence and my audience is 100 miles of where I'm at, there's no reason for them to promote. So I think the key here is you got to think about the return. Like, you know, when are these breweries, like what point, how much sales do they have to have in order for that to be valuable for them? So if they're going to spend $1,000, they have to have $5,000-$10,000 in sales to make it even approach making sense. And, you know, and that's hard sell. You know, that's it, for small breweries, $5,000 to $10,000, you know, big time. You know, that's a month of sales, or a couple weeks or whatever. So, I think that's, you know, that's, you just gotta be careful. I think there's a time and a place for it. And I think some people just try to miss the mark. Or some people don't try to miss the mark. Some people miss the mark and they're trying to do the right thing. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to ask you about, so the bourbon and beer tourism class.
Oh yeah.
I would love to hear what that was like, because I found my love for craft beer in a college course. And so yeah. Seeing that you specifically taught one, I don't know if they're drinking in that room or not. But I'd love to hear about that, what that was like, what you guys, what you talk about in the class, what that's like. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that was, I want to say that was 2015 or 2016 around there. Right. And I was at Eastern Kentucky University at the time, and Kentucky has a well-established bourbon trail, the home of bourbon, some great bourbons.
Yeah, I know nothing about bourbon or Kentucky, but I know that.
Yeah, and there's, and I'm not an expert by any means, but there's a lot of great bourbon out of there. And during my time in Kentucky, I tried a lot of bourbon, gained a newfound respect for it, you know, but they also have a good brewing scene. And so what I really wanted to do is a lot of our students coming through the program were getting interested in that industry, the bourbon, the spirits, the beer, the wine, all that. And so I worked with my supervisor. I worked with the university curriculum and all that. And we developed this curriculum that really focused on tourism as far as experiences and marketing, right? And so we would talk about how we create an experience, talk about how we create a market to a specific target market, and then we would go visit some different breweries and distilleries and talk to the people creating those experiences and creating that marketing and how they each kind of approached it differently. So what they did differently, what they did the same. And then we talk about it as a group is like, you know, so what are they doing right? And where are they missing the mark? And this is a learning experience for students. It wasn't trying to like put down anybody at all. But we visited quite a few different breweries there in the Lexington and Cincinnati area, visited a number of distilleries, from the Lexington to Frankfort area, which is right along I-64. So we went up and down I-75 and across I-64 in the middle of the state, but really looking, you know, using the breweries and the distilleries as our case study to talk about how these brands and these products, how we can recreate experiences around them, how we can market them so that they increase market share, increase sales per transaction, stuff like that. We were not allowed to have the students do any tasting on site. So many of the students were over 21. We did this not on purpose. We had the class in the afternoon so we could travel as part of our experience, right? So if we didn't want to travel in the morning and have the students have to drive all the way back to campus. So the class was at 3 o'clock. We'd meet at a brewery or a distillery every now and then. We'd go through a tour, talk to the people, you know, all that stuff. And then, you know, after it was done, you know, you go home. And some of the folks that were over 21 stayed and hung out. Some didn't, and that's all fine. But we had an amazing time, and I'm actually hoping to recreate that course here in due time. But it was killer. It really, I learned a lot. Number one, I've been a part of the tourism industry in a lot of different ways, especially with like economic impact and looking at outdoor recreation tourism and all that. But, you know, I learned a lot about it. I learned a lot about their strategy in the market and all that. And my students, I mean, even to this day, you know, some of the students were in that class, were friends on Facebook at this point, right? And every now and then they'll post a picture, you know, because, you know, you're going on tour, you're taking pictures, and, you know, inevitably I'm going to make a funny face or whatnot, right? And here's Dr. Bradley being a goofball or whatever it may be. But it was incredible, and it was a fun class. We used a textbook talking mostly about event experiences and stuff like that. And yeah, it was awesome. I if you have any specific questions, I'm happy to answer those. But it was just an incredible fun time as well.
That sounds amazing. I wish any excursions had been involved in what I did. But that was all. That was all in the classroom. I'm curious from, you know, looking at a marketing standpoint, did a conversation about the labels ever come up?
So, and again, this is a few years ago. I know we talked with, so we went to Buffalo Trace Distillery, which is right in Frankfort, Kentucky. And it's one of the more historically known distilleries. And they talked a lot about branding. So not so much about label design, but they talked about branding, incorporating the label into their branding scheme and all that. And so a lot of that concentrated really around consistency, being historically consistent, right? I know we also, we went through, at the time it was 8-Ball Brewing. It since has since been purchased and is now Braxton Labs. We went through that brewery as well, and they had a very unique style about theirs. And you could probably Google that up and find them, 8-Ball Brewing out of Northern Kentucky. And but we did talk to them about, or they did talk about that, how they were very quirky and different. And that was the whole thing. It's like, you know, our idea is to try crazy beers. Sometimes they're going to work, sometimes they're not. But we're going to try different stuff. And, you know, here's the labeling was crazy. And it was all about being different and on purpose, right? And I would compare it to, you know, when you're in high school and a lot of people just, you know, they just dress differently on purpose. It's not necessarily they're dressing because that's who they are or whatever. And I'm not, no judgment here, just like trying to be different to be different, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of what they were going for. You know, a lot of it was a matter of with the distilleries, especially, is just keeping on brand. You know, we've got this long-standing history. People know our label. They know our name. Whatever we do, we have to stay within those parameters.
Yeah. You know, I'm in the first stages of my podcast. I am, you know, working on all of my interviews. You know, figuring out who I want to interview, having the interviews and everything. And so what I wanted to ask you quickly is, you know, how have you seen having guests on your podcast? What's your favorite, you know, what's that experience been like? You know, do you like having them come on? Does that work well for you? And yeah, do you have any, caveats or, you know, advice to give or to offer as I'm, entering this world that you've now done 3 seasons in, launching second podcast.
So we try to have guests on quite a bit. You know, we've definitely migrated in how we do that. Originally, we made sure that we've brought a guest on, we're all sharing the same beers. So like if we had Beer Babe Jess on, and we made sure that we're all drinking the same beer. And I think we're going to migrate away from that just for logistics reasons. But I think having guests on is great. You know, I enjoy my time hanging out with Ray, being buddies, and just drinking and talking. And so I don't want to drown that out with too many guests. But I think that having a guest on keeps it fresh. And we try to rotate. We try to have people that are in the industry, industry adjacent, like influencers, if you will, or whatever you want to call. And then people that really just enjoy craft beer, right? So we try to have all different types of folks join us and just talk, and talk about who they are and find out their story. Right. We had a friend of mine named Jean-Luc on, and he's a GIS analyst for, Berea, Kentucky. And I met him through the brewery there, in Richmond, knew he was a good dude, knew he liked beer, and we had him on 'cause he's a good time. You know, he's a good personality. He's a very fun, loving person. So I would say definitely include guests, you know, depending on what you're trying to do, have a variety of people, and talk about it. And I think that's, you know, variety is the spice of life. But beyond that, I think that, you know, my biggest advice as far as podcasting, that I think, and this is my opinion only, is just make sure that your podcast is a representation of who you are and keep at it. You know, not everybody listens to podcasts. Not everybody's going to listen to a specific podcast, but if you stay true to who you are, you're going to get the right people mm-hmm. listening that are going to enjoy, you know, and I think I mentioned to you, like, you know, do we have the biggest audience ever? No, but we get messages all the time about something we said on the podcast. And that's the best feeling in the world, is somebody that listens and says, hey, Mike, you were wrong about this or that. Right?
It's like, hey, you listen.
I'm happy to be wrong, but That's a good feeling, that to connect to people and to hear them find interest or say, hey, I picked up that beer that we get that too. Like, I picked up the beer you're talking about, and I got to say, either I liked it a lot more or I liked it a lot less than you did. but I think that's because we try to stay true to who we are. You know, we're pretty regular, normal dudes, and we have a good time. So I think that's the big thing.
And so, you know, I'm super excited, obviously, that you're on here. But I know you mentioned that you're not, you know, running around to every podcast. So what is it that you are looking for when you are, you know, what are reasons that you have or haven't maybe done that and, you know, expanded in that way?
Yeah. And I think it's really about just being in line with what and who we are. Because I mentioned to you, I had an invitation to be on one, it's a great podcast for what it is. It's not in line with who I am, and the personalities are different. And I think that's important. And I like them, and I think they have a place in the industry. I think there's a lot of people that listen to that type. I think Joe Rogan is a great example of that, right? Joe Rogan is funny, has a certain place. I don't listen to Joe Rogan on a regular basis, right? I listen to other podcasts that a lot of people are like, I don't know how you'd listen to that. So I think everybody has their spot. I try to make sure that what I'm doing is in line some way. It's been very few invitations I've accepted, but, you know, it's worked like just like this. You know, it's worked out real well where it's I feel comfortable being who I am. So, and the same goes, you know, we're going to talk you into coming on our podcast at some point. And, it's comfortable, and it's in the industry. Right. So I had a couple of people say, hey, come talk about your podcast on this. I'm like, you know, you got a podcast about World War II or whatever, right? Like, thank you. But that's maybe not the best route, you know? And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong for that. Maybe I should just be out there trying to, you know, spread my wings far and wide, but that's kind of my approach to it all.
I think with that specifically, you'd have to know that there's a big Venn diagram or big like middle of a craft beer people that love World War II.
Right.
I don't know, but I love that. So just real quick, before we end off here, just one more time, I wanted to, have you plug whatever, you know, you want.
So I run a consultant firm on the side as a side hustle. It's Red Dirt Consulting. You can find it at reddirt.us. If you're interested in anything like that, we do anything from visitor studies to market analysis to economic impact and a variety of things.
And right? Your specialty though is in parks, as in like.
Yeah. So yes, that's my background historically. I'll be honest. I would say 90% of my work recently is all in the economic world, looking at economic impact of parks.
And what kind of parks?
Meetings, events. What's that?
And what kind of parks?
All of them. Municipal, state, even national at this point. We do a lot of work with the National Forest, a lot of work with the state parks previously. Have some projects coming up. But just, it's a variety. And encourage people to go to reddirt.us and you can see a variety of different things we worked on. Me and Big Ray, we co-host Craft Beer Bucket List. We're on, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Instagram's kind of the king of hill with that. You can find us the Craft Beer Bucket List podcast. You can find on all the major platforms, just search it up. We're on all the ones that matter, I would say. I know there's probably about 200 podcasting platforms, but we're on all the big ones. And then we're going to be on a big break because we're recording the Arkansas Beer Cast is the podcast that's going to accompany the craft beer passport for the state of Arkansas. And we're pumped about that. That's a big project
for
us.
So what's the craft?
It's a fun project.
Yeah. What's the passport?
The state of Arkansas Tourism, working with the Brewers Guild, they created this pamphlet. You open it up, it's got the state and it's got all the different breweries there. And you can go whenever you go to one, you can get it stamped. You get so many stamps, you can send it in, get like a koozie or a sticker. if you fill the whole thing out, you get a t-shirt or whatever. And I'd have to look at the specifics, but you know, you the more brewers you visit in Arkansas, the bigger swag you can get.
Yeah. And how's the podcast connected to it?
Yeah. So there's a QR code on there. So you can scan the QR code. If you're going to go to a specific brewery, you can scan that QR code and find the brewery, click on it or whatever. And listen to learn about. So like if I'm going to Point Remove Brewing in Morrilton, Arkansas, I can click on it. And then me and Ray pop up and we're talking about the history, the beer, the brewers, where they're at, the food, everything about that. So you can kind of learn. It's like a 30-minute history lesson on everything to do with that brewery. So you learn about the brewery, then you can go there and enjoy it.
I would love if that could just exist immediately for every brewery in the country. Right. So when you're done with Arkansas, maybe you can get a deal with all the other 49.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the thing is, it's a lot of fun. We visited a couple breweries recently and we just had a real good time. So we're definitely in it to help them, you know, increase their audience. The fun factor has to be there.
Absolutely. And yeah, it was awesome talking to you. And I'm excited to,
you as well,
to drink something virtually with you, at some point. Sure. On the pod. And staying in touch. So yeah.
We'll talk to you soon, Jenna. Have a great day.
Bye. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. I think it's really cool to learn about the, you know, the focus on the parks and the outdoor stuff that he does and how he's tying that all in with beer and with the beer passports. And I just think it's all really cool. And I also really love to talk about, you know, what it really entails to, you know, kind of put yourself out there and, you know, put yourself out on the internet for something that you love, you know, craft beer, and you know, some of the anxieties that come with that, but also the great community that comes with it and the benefits that there are from it that, you know, I clearly am seeing, that I know Mike sees. And just, you know, be able to share something in a different way, like the way that we are with podcasting and being on the internet with Instagram and stuff, and just sharing something that we really love. And I also just think his perspective, again, is just so interesting with making it more about bringing in the local areas and parks and how that's all tied together. So yeah, I really hope you guys enjoyed listening to that. And so with that said, we're going to wrap up here, and I hope that you will tune in next week and stay up to date with everything with the Craft Brewers Creative and Beer Can Lover. So make sure to check that out on Instagram and follow along, and I will see you guys next week. So thank you again so much for listening and tuning in. I really do appreciate everyone that has been tuning in, giving me feedback. It's been so much fun. And if you have any comments, questions, or anything, make sure to send a note to pod@beercanlover.com. That's pod@beercanlover.com. And also, if you want to, you know, give me a comment or anything that you want to share that you want featured on the podcast, there's a link in my bio on Instagram @beercanlover where you can actually send in a clip, an audio clip of you talking that I can include. And I think that'll be really fun to do. So make sure to do that as well. Thank you again, and I will see you guys next week.